In my younger years, I loved the aquarium with such abandon. I found all the exhibits, tanks, and displays utterly absorbing. As a student, I remember making repeated field trips to the Mystic Aquarium. Do they happen every year? Well beyond the age when it should have happened, I would fall several halls behind the rest of my class and my teacher, so far behind that one of the chaperones would have to come and find me, worried that I had gotten lost in the aquarium. In a way, I had. Yet I also felt intensely at home there, like I could have happily inhabited its halls for the rest of my days, passing them in a watery dream from which I would never have to wake. It was probably these visits that prompted me to ask my parents for a fish tank, which I maintained for years. The tank was not quite as magical as the Mystic Aquarium, though. The scale changed the feeling a bit. When I grew up and started snorkeling, that watery early dream came rushing back to me, life-sized. The creatures I saw underwater were ones I recalled from those visits to the aquarium. Turtles and stingrays and sharks and fish. I never saw an octopus out in the wild, but I do remember a snorkeling guide pointing to an octopus's underwater den and telling us to keep an eye out. It can be hard to spot an octopus that's not kept in a tank, since they are natural masters of disguise. I searched the ocean then and since without much luck. Not too long ago, and with great interest, my husband and I watched a documentary called My Octopus Teacher, produced by the South African filmmaker Craig Foster. A decade ago, Foster encountered an octopus in the kelp forest off the Western Cape in front of his home. He was so enchanted by her, this nameless female octopus vulgaris, that he made the decision to return to those waters every day to visit her. For the next year, he did that, free diving in the cold cross currents there, wearing goggles and fins, but refusing any wetsuit, worrying that it would create too much of a barrier between him and the sea creatures swimming all around him. Foster's intention, devotion, and attention resulted in his creating a special interspecies friendship with the cephalopod, one that spanned almost the entirety of her natural life. In that time, she became his teacher. In that time, Foster became her student. He followed her from one den to another and learned to track her movements. Observing her closely, he soon realized that she was observing him, and with an uncanny intelligence, too. As mollusks without a shell, vulnerable to any number of predators, octopuses have grown ingenious at engineering their own survival, becoming adaptable and inventive. In one of the more shocking moments of the film, in her determination to evade a shark hunting her, the octopus scampers out of the water and onto shore. Suddenly, we realize that she has a marvelous ability to stride into our world for a while. As alien as she seems to him at first, Foster comes to appreciate how similar he and this octopus are. With her tentacles, she embraces friendship with him. In affectionate moments, she actually cuddles with him underwater. He is touched when she wraps her arm around his fingers and latches her suckers onto them. He worries for her when he is away from the water. He wonders what she dreams about when she sleeps in her den. He finds it comic the way she plays with his camera. Understanding that octopuses have relatively short lives, he is driven by an urgent need to know her better, to learn the lessons she has to impart while there is still time. His film took nearly 10 years to finish. Speaking into the camera, Foster tells viewers, "What she taught me to feel was that you're a part of this place, not a visitor. That's a huge difference." In those intervening years, Foster started the Sea Change Project to help preserve the kelp forest that was native habitat to his octopus teacher. Over time, he became a part of that place, and it became a part of him. He recognized the rhythms of his day as belonging to larger life cycles. In her poem, The Avowal, Denise Levertov recognizes that swimmers who dare to let the water bear them learn to attain free fall and float into Creator Spirit's deep embrace, knowing no effort earns that all-surrounding grace. In his free dives to visit his octopus teacher, Foster floats into that embrace of spirit. He appreciates the miraculous dimension of their bond. His impulse is one every mystic throughout the ages has shared, to better know the unknown, to somehow be acquainted with the altogether alien. We humans have a strange capacity to understand the entirely other at an essential level. Perhaps that explains the popular fascination with octopuses in recent years. As the naturalist Cy Montgomery wrote in her 2015 book, The Soul of an Octopus, it's hard to find an animal more unlike a human than an octopus. They have no bones. They breathe underwater. We go head, body, limbs. They go body, head, limbs. While octopuses can grow to be human-sized, they remain very differently shaped. In these octopuses, Montgomery recognizes, as many do these days, what we humans tend to locate in our hearts and minds, namely a consciousness tantamount to soul. Oddly enough, the majority of earthly existence is comprised by creatures like octopuses, over 90%, in fact. As Montgomery notes, the ocean constitutes the majority of the globe. The majority of the creatures live in that ocean, and most of those are invertebrates, like mollusks. We know that human life emerged from the sea, but that makes us the ultimate other of this world. Unfortunately, we are always in danger of acting that role, remaining apart from, resisting being a part of what Montgomery calls animate creation, by taming it or exploiting it, too often destroying it, and too rarely studying it. Like Foster, Montgomery believes that aquatic creatures are her teachers, and she is rightly their student. The octopus who prompted her writing her book did not live in the wild, but resided at the New England Aquarium. She had a name, Athena, after the goddess of wisdom. Montgomery knows that individual octopuses have a developed intelligence and emotion and personalities, and that Athena seemed as curious about her as she was about Athena. Athena not only had a capacity for connection, much as Foster's friend does, she exhibits a desire for it, wrapping her tentacles around Montgomery's arm and tugging her toward the aquarium tank. All interspecies bonds seem motivated by this delight in knowing and being known. In the documentary about his octopus, Foster extols the pure magnificence of her, admitting, "I fell in love." Montgomery describes the attachment she formed to Athena when they gazed into one another's eyes. There are remarkable structural similarities between the eyes of octopuses and humans. One zoologist called it the single most startling feature of the whole animal kingdom, that our eyes are nearly identical to that of octopuses. We say that the eyes are the windows into the soul. Octopuses seem to want to peer into our souls as much as we want to peer into theirs. Like octopuses, we humans are watchful sorts. We are almost as vulnerable to our environments as they are to theirs. And so we do all the things that our distant relations, separated from us by hundreds of millions of years of evolution, do. We build homes. We stock them with food. We collect tools. We arrange gardens. We map the neighborhood and know our neighbors, the good, the bad, and the ugly. For all these reasons, I never eat octopus. It seems almost cannibalistic to me. Octopuses spend the majority of their days in their dens. They hatch their young there, and when nature takes its course, they die there too. They live by their instincts, but their instincts are not primitive. Octopuses in the wild are masterful at evading predators, but octopuses in captivity are equally masterful at engineering escapes and do so with alarming regularity. Perhaps what we humans love best is that octopuses, whether they are in the open sea or in a large tank, are indeed free spirits, that they have a drive to explore and enjoy discovery and crave encounter as much as we do. During this period of extended quarantine, most of us are frustrated by our lives in captivity, much as Athena was at her aquarium in downtown Boston. We can feel confined and confused. It seems at times as though we are living in human variants of the fishbowl. We peer at others' lives through screens and they peer back into ours. Lately, we are all asked to behave in ways that feel counterinstinctual. Every year we hold our annual blessing of the animals because we believe we are both blessed and instructed by the creatures in our world, and we want to remain eager learners. What octopuses remind us is that there is a wisdom in the depth of our vulnerability. It is schooling us in the necessity of survival. Eventually, the day will come when we can safely depart our dens and move about, making our rounds. But until then, we can wait and watch and study and all the while dream.